Okay. It's on.
This is Dr. Laura Calkins of the Vietnam Archive at Texas Tech University, initiating an oral history interview with Maddie Tippett. Today is the 15th of November, 2005, and Maddie and I are sitting together here in Lubbock, Texas. Let me first of all thank you, Maddie, for being willing to do the interview.
You're welcome.
Maddie, where were you born?
Fort Worth, Texas.
When?
November the 28th, 1922.
What do you remember first?
What do I remember first? I really don't know. I keep saying I must have been born in the basement of the Baptist church in Fort Worth, because every time I turned around, my parents took me to church.
That's where you were to be found? Had they been Baptists all their lives, both of them?
No, they were. I haven't been, but they were.
Let me ask a little bit about your mom. What was her name?
Her name was Edith, E-D-E-T-H, Edith Crouch Tippett.
Uh-huh. And Crouch was her maiden name?
Yeah.
And where were her people from?
Eastland, Texas. Her mother and father lived in Eastland, but she was one of 12 children.
Wow. where did she fall in the stack?
She was the youngest girl.
That's a pretty good place to be.
Yeah. I had wonderful aunts and uncles. Mostly aunts. I didn't know my uncles all that well.
Were they living in the Fort Worth area as you were growing
up?
Oh,
they lived all over West Texas. Not Abilene. San Angelo, Ballinger, someplace else. The oldest boy lived in he was a rancher. And my aunts, one lived in Ballinger, one lived in San Angelo. One lived wherever she wanted to. had aunt and uncle that lived in Fort Worth out on the Trinity River. Most of them lived in Texas, but all around the Panhandle and West Texas, mostly.
And were they close? Was it a close family?
Oh, yeah. Very close. We had family reunions all the time. We'd have a family reunion in Ballinger, and there'd be 100 or more people there.
Wow. What about your dad? I can't imagine. It's great. What about your father?
My father was one of three. He had a sister that lived somewhere in Tennessee. He had a brother who was killed when he and his fiancée were killed by a train accident when I think the brother was 21.
Where did that happen?
I don't remember where it happened. Somewhere in Tennessee or in that area, Kentucky, somewhere over there. So actually, my father and his sister were the only ones that I really knew anything about, and I didn't know her that well either. But Daddy was a funeral director.
And how did he come to be in that line of work?
I don't know. I don't know if he ever told me or not. It was just one of the things he was. Mm-hmm. In fact, he and my mother met. My mother was a student nurse, and my father ran the ambulances to the hospital, and they became acquainted and eventually married.
Now, what hospital are we talking
St. Joseph's in Fort Worth.
Is it still called St. Joe's up there? That's what I thought.
It's still there. Mother used to say that they had no place to go and be alone. But there was a cemetery across the street from the hospital. So Mother always said that they would court it at Solomon's tomb because there was a big headstone there with the name of Solomon on it.
Your mom was a nurse.
Yeah, then. She was a student when they met, and then she graduated.
Did some of her older sisters or brothers also do medical work?
No.
What do you think drew her to nursing? Do you know?
I don't have any idea.
Did you ever ask her?
I don't think she ever told me why. She just went, you know. Many of the aunts were married and had families and just sort of were there.
They didn't have to have a career. But your mom wanted a career, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
she apparently did.
Uh-huh. Did she continue to work after she married your dad?
Well, I was born in 22. My next sister was born in 24. We lived in Fort Worth, and at that time, my father's mother lived with them. And when my sister, Katie, was born, Within the year afterwards, my mother said to my father, make up your mind, you want to live with me or your mother. And mother moved out. And so my mother raised, she's quit nursing at that time.
I see.
And raised the two of us. And then, of course, Ruthie came along. She was 9 years younger than I am. I was born 22 and she was born 30. But she was born in January of the 30, and I was born in November of 22. So it's just 9 years.
Just 9 years almost exactly, yeah.
And she didn't do any nursing until World War II. And there was such a shortage of nurses in the United States because they were in the service,
mm-hmm.
that she took private duty nursing.
By her own arrangement, or did she?
Yeah, mm-hmm. She made arrangements with the private duty office there.
Mm-hmm.
Things that she could remember and knew she knew how to do. I can remember one time, after she'd been in it a while, she worked for a small hospital there in Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
And I was on vacation, and they needed someone to scrub, and I had already had my surgery rotation. So I scrubbed with my mother circulating. And the doctor would say, Miss Tippett, and they wouldn't know which one to answer.
Both heads would turn around.
So finally he said, now I'm going to call you by your first name, Maddie, and I'll call her Miss Tippett. So you'll know what's going on. Anyhow, for a couple of days I scrubbed did surgery, and I scrubbed and mother circulated.
Amazing. There aren't very many people who could say that, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Let me know a little bit about growing up. Did you live in... Your father had his own business by what time?
No, he worked for Harrison & Cole in Fort Worth.
Okay.
And it wasn't until we moved to Tyler in 1936, I think it was, 36, that he had his own business.
And he opened it, or did
he?
Or was there an existing?
He and a couple of men, or some other men, opened a funeral home in Tyler. There was only one there, so they went in.
Uh-huh.
And we moved there at that time. There was a tremendous tragedy about the time we moved there. It was called the New London School Explosion. There was an odorless gas that collected in the walls of the school, and something set it off and it blew the school up with all the students in it. And my father worked day and night for a week or more in relation to this, a tragedy. And I saw some of the reconstructive work that he did. He was very, very good at that. Some of the students had rocks and concrete blown into their face and their body and everything else, and Daddy did the reconstruction. I saw one young man, had a picture of him, and then the man, the body. And my father had him down to a T. He was good.
Did that scare you, or did it...
No, I was just real proud of him.
Proud, yeah? You were proud of him?
Yeah. Well, let's see, I was about 14, 15 years old, something like that. And I really was proud of him. He did a beautiful, beautiful job. He was wonderful at that sort of thing.
Did you see the impact?
I didn't see him working. I saw the result.
Uh-huh. Did you go to any of the services, or were you around for any of that?
No,
so that you could see the families?
Because the New London, it was in the New London,
yeah.
Which is a little town in East Texas. And most of the funerals were in that area.
Sure.
But when they worked on the body, they had to bring it to Tyler to the Birch Walker Daniel, at that time Birch Walker Daniel Funeral Home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he did the reconstruction work. And then the body was taken for the funeral.
Oh, I see. Okay. You had to... you were growing up in the Depression, and your dad started this business kind of at the tail end of the Depression.
Yeah.
Do you remember much about those years or any problems? Or did you think you were like everybody else?
The Tyler was very closed society. Mm-hmm. They didn't want any strangers in.
Indeed.
And so the funeral home itself, I don't know how long, a year and a half, 2 years, it just didn't go. So when they all decided to close it,
mm-hmm.
My father went to work for the funeral home that was there, Birch Walker Daniel Funeral Home. And later on, it became the Birch Walker Tippett Funeral Home.
How did that happen?
I don't remember. I just know that he was asked, I don't know if Mr. Daniels died or what, but he was asked to come in, and he did. And so it's Birch Walker Tippett. There's a sign over there on the wall that was on the funeral cars.
Oh, sure enough. Now, the business that your dad opened, and he was in with a couple of other guys, and it lasted maybe...
maybe a year and a half, 2 years.
Really?
They really tried to make a go of it, but it just didn't work.
Because pretty much everyone was already...
focused.
Leaning toward the the one place in town. Did the other two or more guys that were in business with your dad, did they stay?
I don't know. I lost track of them completely.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think your dad wanted to stay in Tyler, even though his business...
It's a very good town. Oh, Tyler's a wonderful town. It's called the Rose Garden of America.
Why did... Was your mom happy there, too?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mother... Well, we were living there during... they were living there during World War II, and that's where she went back into nursing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I did my scrubbing with my mother, circulating and so forth, and right there in Tyler. And they're buried there now.
So that really became home for
them?
That
became home, yeah.
Yeah.
Most of my memories or growing up memories are in Tyler. See, when I went there, I went into high school. Katie went into junior high, and Ruthie went into elementary.
Mm-hmm.
So we just grew up through the schools there.
What was high school like there? You started in 1936 or so, something like that.
I graduated in 11. Well, don't they go to high school now for 11 years? Or 12.
12, I think. Uh-huh.
Well, I graduated in 11. That's all we had.
Okay.
Was 11 years. I was 16 when I graduated.
You were 16.
I was 5 when I started school.
You were tearing it up. What high school was it? Was it called?
John Tyler High.
John Tyler High?
In Tyler, Texas.
What was... the academics like? I mean, were you a good student?
A, B, and C. Depended on who was teaching it and what it was.
So you had some things that were more exciting and interesting to you?
I guess.
Like what kinds of things?
I don't remember it so much the curriculum. I enjoyed the physical education. Although back in those days, I would keep saying ladies didn't do that back then. I didn't play basketball, although I was plenty tall enough to play basketball.
Yeah, just for the record, how tall were you?
Oh, at that time I was 5'10 and a half.
And on your way?
Up to 6'1".
There you go.
But I was a member of the Drum and Bugle Corps. No, I was manager of the Drum and Bugle Corps.
So were you musical then?
I was a manager. I wasn't any blowing anything or beating anything.
You were in charge of?
Of making sure they'd performed right. I can remember I had a math teacher who would take her math book and hit me across the shoulders and say, "Stand up straight." And I had a physical education teacher who'd take her tennis racket and hit me across the shoulder and say, "Stand up straight," because I was so tall. And everybody else was such a tiny little bitty thing, you know. There was one other girl in school that was that was as tall as I. And I guess you slump.
Is that what, do you think you were doing that?
I was slumping.
Yeah.
And they would say, stand up, and hit me across the shoulders in the back. And say, "Stand up." I enjoyed them. I think, I'm not sure, I've always thought that there were two of the teachers that were lesbians and were friends.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know whether they're partners, but they were close friends.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a math teacher. and heard so much about the physical education teachers, but mine wasn't. She was married and happily so.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed it.
Were you, it sounds like you were aware.
No, I was aware later.
Later?
Yeah.
Okay.
I didn't come out until I was nearly 21. Or 21.
And what do you mean by that when you say you didn't come out to yourself?
My first love was when I was 21, and that's when I learned what the hell I was doing in life.
Okay. Between graduating and being 21, what did you think your life was going to look like?
I didn't even think about it. I was going to be a nurse.
Mm-hmm.
I was allowed to enter nursing school before I was 18.
And where did this happen?
Parkland Hospital, Dallas, Texas. I was supposed to be 18 to go into nursing school, but they started in September, and my birthday was in November. And the woman let me in. Every school I've ever gone to, I've gone in ahead of time, up to that point.
Did you have an interview?
Oh, yeah.
And what did that consist of? Do you remember it?
No, just she finally said yes.
She said okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I graduated, finished my 3 years, passed my state boards, had to make up time because I had been ill a couple of times and had been in the hospital. When I went in to finally get my pin and be okay that I could wear my whites and wear my pin, she said, "Miss Tippett, I'm still not sure I should have let you in nursing school."
Do you remember her name?
Mary Price Smith.
And what was she trying to tell you, Maddie?
God only knows. I was into something the whole 3 years I was in school.
Now, do you want to clarify that?
Well, she had a very hard wooden chair in her office that you sat in when you were on the carpet.
Mm-hmm.
And I wore it out.
You were there often?
All the time.
What kind of infractions were you committing? I can't imagine.
Well, I don't know. I was just always into something. Nothing big, nothing. But we had to smoke up on the roof. We couldn't smoke in our rooms, and I did smoke at that time.
Uh-huh.
And somebody was talking one night up there, and I said, "Well, no, Mayor Price was play hell to kicking me out of nursing school." The next morning in the breakfast line, she stepped in front of me, and she said, "Miss Tippett, I understand you that I'd play hell for this. Kicking you out of nursing school." And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I said that."
Can't lie.
We had a snitch in our...
It sounds like it.
Yeah. And I said, "Yes, ma'am, I said that."
What'd she say back?
Nothing.
Nothing.
What can you say? I didn't deny it.
Hey, right, at least you owned up to it.
Yeah.
So, just for someone who might not understand the setup, you're attending school, and would you be living in a dorm that was
near
the hospital?
Yeah, we lived in a dormitory.
And
we lived, and we had about 12 people in a dormitory room.
12 in a room?
In a whole huge room.
Okay. So, how would the sleeping arrangements be?
Everybody had their own bed.
Uh-huh.
And I don't remember about the clothes or anything.
Uh-huh.
I just know that there was a big bed.
Right.
And then after we got past our first year, we were allowed to go into private or semi-private rooms, and it just depended on the luck of the draw.
Okay.
And I think after we left the dormitory rooms, I was in a private room the rest of the time, and I'm not sure if that's because I was always in trouble or what.
You might have been being segregated there.
But it was nice. Yeah.
Now, did your parents help you out with the costs, or how was that?
My parents paid. They paid for me to go to school. Yes.
Were they excited about your career and supportive of you? Other than
they were supportive. I don't know about excited, but they were supportive.
Uh-huh.
I got $25 a month total spending money.
So that kept you pretty close to the ground, probably.
Well, you know what? It's 1940 to 43. That was a lot of money.
You could make it go.
You could make it go if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
My parents were always supportive. My father said to me, "Now, sis, whatever you do, you have to finish, because I don't have the money for you to play around." So it was either medicine or nursing. And I decided on nursing.
Might there have been a possibility that you wanted to study medicine?
He probably would have tried to put me through medical school if I had felt that I really, really had a calling. But I didn't necessarily have that calling. It was medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And nursing was the closest to medicine that would come.
But he would have supported you, you think, if you tried to go to medical school? Because, again, we're talking about 1940.
Yeah, considering the income and everything else, it would have been just as bad as it would be right now.
Yes, yeah, and tough. I mean, a hard go. So he wanted you to think in a mature way about you.
Oh yeah,
what you were.
Well, they always wanted me thinking in a mature way.
Did they expect a lot of you?
Straight A's, of course. Mm-hmm. No, I didn't have them, but.
did they give you advice as to how you might improve, or were
no,
they accepting?
No, I just
accepting?
Knew that I had to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Would you say that your relationship with them was strong?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you go home much during those 3 years?
Well, let's see. In nursing school, I can remember being on night duty on Friday night, Daddy picking me up on Saturday morning, and I have Saturday and Sunday. Going home to Tyler, mm-hmm. and then coming back to school, mm-hmm. for the Monday classes.
Did you look forward to weekends going home?
Yeah.
Would you rather have stayed?
No.
In
I enjoyed going
the
home.
Big city, Dallas.
Uh-huh. No, I enjoyed going home. I've always got along with my sisters, mm-hmm. and they were home still, and. I'd go home and Mother would say, "Now, Mad Elizabeth, be quiet. Your sister Catherine was up late sewing the suit she wants to wear tonight, and she's still asleep." I'd get in the car and I'd scoot down and go to sleep. And I'd wake up and I'd light a cigarette, and my father would say, "Put those away and don't let your mother see you using them."
But he didn't tell you not to.
Mm-hmm.
He smoked. He just didn't want your mom to know.
Yeah.
Did he think it would break her heart? Or
I don't know what he thought. He just said, "Don't let your mother see you smoking."
Where did you start smoking? When did you pick that up?
Oh, I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
Would sneak down to the...
Were you being a rebel? Or
yeah.
That's what I thought.
Sneak down to the pharmacy and charge a pack of cigarettes on my father's account. I guess I was stupid enough to think he wouldn't know it. But he found it out, of course.
He did.
And he said something one day, and I said, "Yes, sir, I did." Not much else you can say about that.
It sounds like he loved you.
My father was an absolutely phenomenal man. He really was. He was a male chauvinist, but he was a gentleman of the old school. And he cared about all of his family. I can remember one time my mother said, "Mrs. White is going to divorce Mr. White." And my father said, "What did she do?" And mother said, "Tip, he's been running around on her for years. She didn't do a thing except finally get her smart enough to get out of it." But what did she do?
Mm-hmm.
No.
But he had 3 girls.
He had 3 girls.
Do you think that he ever treated you differently than he would have if he'd had a son?
No.
Not necessarily.
He treated the 3 of us just the same.
Mm-hmm.
He was accepting of us. When I would have a decision to make as I grew up,
mm-hmm.
I would go in and I would talk to my father. Now, this is after I'm already out of school, out of the service, anything. From the time I was finished high school on, I would go in and I'd say, "Daddy, so-and-so, I'm thinking about doing this."
Mm-hmm.
"Well, sis, what?" And he'd ask questions. And he'd say, "Do you need any help?" I'd "No, sir, I just want you to know what I'm fixing to do." "Okay. If you need any help, let me know." And that was the end of the discussion.
But you wanted to... What were you seeking?
I just wanted him to know.
Mm-hmm.
So that he would know what was going on.
Did you have the same kind of exchanges with your mom?
Not in the same way. I probably did, but not in the same way. I remember talking to my father about what I planned to do with my life or in the next few months or whatever.
Right.
And he was always supportive. And he said, if you need any help, let me know.
That's pretty good backup.
That's a wonderful backup.
Yeah.
It was one time, and I can't remember when it was. I know what. When I went came back to Texas to go to school, in embalming school, I was working enough to pay my rent and pay my food, but not to make my car payment. And he made that car payment for me during the year I was in school.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty neat.
Yeah, it is.
Pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was Parkland Hospital like when you were there?
City County Hospital. It was an older building. Sort of E-shaped.
Mm-hmm.
Basement, first floor, second floor. I think they only had those two floors. I don't remember a third floor, but there could have been. And the basement was the black. It was segregated. And the black units were down in the basement. The first floor was the offices and some units, I can't remember them, but the next floor had the pediatrics unit and the psych unit and all kinds of different things. There must have been three floors because one of them had surgery in the middle of the E, that part.
Yeah.
And then private on one end. And we had also an isolation unit on one of the wings.
And would that be for people who were incarcerated, or?
That would be for people who had mumps and measles and all kinds of contagious disease.
Okay.
It was a contagious disease, Warren.
Okay.
We had a tremendous amount of polio when I was a student nurse.
Yes.
In the early 40s.
Yes.
And we took care of the polio patients. Did the hot packs, the kidney packs, and all of that sort of thing. I remember when I was in the Navy, I was in the PX, and this handsome young man walked up and said, "Aren't you Miss Tippett?" And I said, "Yes, I am." "Weren't you at Parkland Hospital?" And I said, "Yes, I was." He said, "I'm so-and-so. I was one of the brothers that you took care of who had polio." There were brothers, and they both had polio. This one was big and muscular and sturdy. The other one was very slender and very, I'll call him weak, but he wasn't weak. He just was not very, very big.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the bigger one was the one that was in the service. And I said, what about your brother? I said, "You're looking good. What about your brother?" He said, "He's pretty crippled."
Wow. Go ahead.
Anyhow, the polio epidemic in the early 40s was quite a thing for us.
There was a lot of public fear, wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
About it?
Oh, yeah.
How was it spread?
You know what? I can't remember, but I think water and contact.
Mm-hmm.
I think there was some contamination of fluids, water, stuff like that.
What was the technology for treating it? I mean, you couldn't cure it, right?
You couldn't cure it, and you couldn't do much with it except try to keep the muscles from completely deteriorating.
Right.
And there was a woman from Australia named Sister Kinney who developed the Kinney packs, which were different shaped wool blanket. Now, you remember the old, you probably don't, the old green wool blankets that they had in the service?
Very heavy.
Very heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. They were cut so that you had one that would fit over the thigh one that would fit over the leg, one that would fit over the arm. They were cut in different shapes, and you put them in boiling water, or as close to boiling as you could get, mm-hmm. and then you squeeze them out, and you put them on the muscles.
And this was because they would hold heat, right?
They would hold the heat, and it would cause the muscle to relax and to become functional.
And these, you would apply these to the principal muscle groups, like a quad or...
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How often did you have to do this?
I'm not sure I remember that very much. I know that I had red hands.
Yeah. It sounds like a lot.
Squeezing them out.
Sounds like an immense amount of work. Very labor-intensive for each patient.
Yeah.
What was the patient pool like in polio ward? Would it mostly be young people?
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Under 21?
Basically, yeah, 21 and under. These young men were in their teens,
yeah.
The one I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we had other kinds of contagious diseases there.
Sure. Right.
But
polio was...
It was destructive. Yeah. In fact, my Dr. Scott, my doctor, has a crippled leg.
Did you ever worry about contracting it yourself?
No, because we were taught how to keep from it.
How?
Wear a gown, wear a mask, mm-hmm. wash your hands.
Mm-hmm.
If you had to, you could wear gloves, but we didn't. But we used our hands, but then we washed. Outside each room was the wash basin and hand to keep yourself clean. And the gowns were out there and everything.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Were the masks special, or was it just a piece of cotton?
Just cotton. Just your regular mask.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know, it was... You just did what you were supposed to do. Mm-hmm. If you were smart... If you were stupid, you didn't.
how many gals were in your class?
30.
And how many of them graduated with you at the same time?
Practically all of them.
No washouts?
I don't remember more than one or two.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it was a washout. I think it was a matter of family or something like that.
Some intervening issue in their lives.
Something in the family life.
Mm-hmm. Did you kind of coalesce as a group, the 30 of you, or not so much?
We kind of went our own way, but we were together when we were together. We had to be in at a certain time, and they locked the doors.
Right.
So that if the ones that smoked always got together up on the roof... And the ones that didn't get together, but you know, we had pretty good interaction. Some were more friendly than others.
Mm-hmm.
It was a pretty decent group.
What in your training, let's say by the different rounds that you had to do, was the one or two that you thought were most interesting or that you liked the most? Was it emergency room or surgery or wards?
Well, it was all new and it was all interesting.
Yeah.
I enjoyed public health. We had a month on public health with one of the public health nurses. I enjoyed the emergency room. Did what I wasn't supposed to. I ran on an emergency run on the ambulance.
You did?
Yeah, sure did. Everybody did that.
Well, do you remember any of those?
Well, only did one.
What was, do you remember that
went
one?
Went to the second floor to get a woman who was pregnant that was in labor and couldn't get her down. There was no elevator, so we had to carry her down in a straight chair down spiral steps. That was pretty difficult.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Everything turned out okay?
I guess so. I don't remember any catastrophe.
You weren't supposed to necessarily go on these runs.
We were not supposed to get in that emergency ambulance, mm-hmm. but every single one of us did it.
Why?
Because we didn't supposed to.
Because they said not to.
That's right. Anyhow, how do you know in City County Hospital,
right.
how do you know what's going on out there if you don't go out and find out?
Yeah.
So we all did it.
Do you remember hearing about any of the other gals, the runs that they went on?
No.
Not so much?
No. emergency room was interesting because everything in God's green earth came in. And we'd have people, well, I can remember one doctor one time. This woman, I think it was a woman. Somebody came in, had tried to commit suicide, had slit their wrists or something. And I remember the doctor saying, now, if you really, really want to commit suicide, let me tell you how to do it. And he told him how to do it. Mm-hmm. Take bichloride of mercury tablets, dissolve them, and drink it. And it will destroy your kidneys. Even if they pump your stomach out within the next 10 or 15 minutes, enough of it gets through that it'll destroy your kidneys and you'll die from lack of urine output. I can remember I was working, at Breckenridge Hospital down in Austin when I was going to the University of Texas. And this woman came in, she had drunk bichloride of mercury, and they'd pumped her out, and she was in just having a ball. And I was just sitting there working. I said, she'll be dead before the week's over. And everybody looked at me like I had lost my mind. She was dead before the week was over. It had destroyed her kidneys. And she died. I had seen it happen. And a lot of these people had never seen it, never even heard of it.
Never heard of it. Was she obviously trying to commit suicide, or was...
I think she was trying to get attention.
Uh-huh.
And that's one way to do it.
Mm-hmm. How much of that did you see in the emergency room there, people trying to get attention?
Not all that much.
How busy was the ER there?
Oh, it was city county, so it was Dallas, Texas. It was busy. There were not very many nights when there was an hour without something coming in.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that, the pace of it?
Oh, yeah.
Not to mention the variety of...
Yeah, it was interesting.
Did you see traumas there? What you might call traumas?
Like accidents and things like
that? Yeah,
yeah. You saw them, yeah. There's just a general run of things, accidents, auto accidents or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I've done so much reading since then, and a lot of it has to do with that, had to do with that sort of thing. And so... sometimes my mind says, oh, yeah, you saw that. No, you didn't. You read about that.
Did you feel that you were getting a good grounding?
Oh, yeah. We had things at our school that a lot of other schools didn't have.
I believe.
And they came to us to get that experience.
Like what?
Pediatrics, isolation, psychiatry.
Tell me about the psychiatric ward. What did that look like?
Locked ward.
Yeah.
It was locked.
Mm-hmm.
You had to knock to get in, and you had to identify yourself, and you just took care of the patients, whatever they were, whether they were catatonic or whatever. Some of them extremely excitable, so you used the hot tub to calm them down.
Can you describe that?
Huh?
Can you describe that? Would you say
it was just a tub with a canvas sort of envelope,
mm-hmm.
and the person was put in there, and then the top was put on, and just their head was out, and they were put into warm water.
And that was to calm them down.
Oh yeah.
Would you ever use cold water one of those?
No, not for that.
But for something?
I don't remember ever using cold water. I remember using only warm and hot water.
Mm-hmm.
See, not hot, but better than tepid.
Okay, and what you would think of as a relaxing...
Yeah, yeah.
And was it effective?
Yeah, well, it worked.
Because, of course, you know, I mean, now... I mean,
you have so many medicines.
Yes,
now.
It's write a script, and here's your Valium or whatever to calm down.
No, it worked. It worked.
Were there drugs that could
there were
be
not
used?
That many, not as many as they have now.
Oh, sure, but
I don't remember any of them because I don't. I remember occasionally giving medication, but mostly I remember when they really got upset and excited and stuff that we used the tub.
Yeah. Did the patients dread that?
I don't think they did. They didn't like necessarily being restrained, because you're restrained when you're an envelope. I don't think they necessarily liked that, mm-hmm. but it worked for them, so.
Okay. How long would you have on each of these different rotations?
3 months on every rotation.
3 months.
Days, 3 to 11 and 11 to 7.
That's packing it in.
That's packing it in.
Yeah. You didn't have a lot of time for hijinks. Yeah. But it sounds like when there was time, you found a way to bring yourself to the attention of Miss Smith.
Yeah.
Well, you were notable anyway. She.
I'm not sure I ever should have let you go through nursing school. Finish.
Well,
let me tell you something. One time I was living in Pasadena, California, and was traveling to the University of Southern California on the red car, the public transportation.
Yes.
And I got on the streetcar one time to go to the red car station, and I thought I saw that woman get on the streetcar, and I nearly fainted. She was really a tough woman, and it just scared the hell out of me.
She was tough.
She was very rigid, very, very uptight, very one way.
What we might think of as someone with control issues?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just nearly fainted when I saw this person get on. It could have been her, it could have not been her, but I thought it was. And I want you to know, I was at the back of the car and I stayed there.
She left an impression.
A very definite impression. Now, she was a good person as far as being a head of a nursing and all of that. She did a fine job. But she scared the hell out of you.
Was that the impact she had on pretty much everybody, do you think?
Oh, yeah.
And she ran the shop that way,
she
sounds like.
She ran the place.
Who did
the nurses.
Who did she report to?
Her.
Would she report to a doctor?
No, she was the head of it.
So she was on her
she
own?
She was it.
Wow. No, there's no one with, no one had a choke chain on her at all.
And see, in at that time in Parkland, our nurses, instructors taught us everything we knew. We took anatomy and physiology, microbiology, all of the courses were taught by nurses in our nursing school.
Now, these would all be the faculty, essentially.
That's right.
Who worked for her.
Yeah.
Did you have any particular close relationship with any of those instructors?
We had one instructor. Her name was Emma Pope. She taught anatomy and physiology, and she was a woman in her 70s, I think.
Uh-huh.
I just adored her. When I got my state board grades back, I went screaming over there, "Miss Pope, Miss Pope, Miss Pope." Guess what I made on anatomy and physiology? I don't know, Maddie. 96. 100 was perfect.
Hmm.
And I can tell you, what I didn't get. And I said, I left one blank. At that time, you had to fill in the blanks.
Yeah, no multiple choice.
No, mm-hmm. You filled in the blanks.
Sure.
And I said, the one that I left blank was, what is the name of leprosy? What is the other name for leprosy? And I couldn't think of it. It's called Hansen's disease. You better believe.
You know.
I've never forgotten that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And in one of my psych tests one time, you know how when you're sitting around, you used to say, what is so-and-so? What is so-and-so?
Right.
And so-and-so
rattles
it off.
Yeah, yeah, right.
The one question somebody said, what are the three kinds of shock therapy? And I thought, three kinds? There's only two. But someone rattled them off. One of them I had never heard of. And so the question on the test was, name the three kinds of shock therapy and tell what you know about them. So I talked about the first two, and they said, and there's a third one named so-and-so about which I know absolutely nothing.
And that's what you wrote down?
That's what I wrote down, and I made 100 on the test. That's what she asked, what do you know about them? But you better believe the next day I could tell her everything there was about that test.
Did you run and check as soon as you walked out of the...
As soon as I went out of there, I went to wherever I could get it and found out what it was all about.
You're on the details. Interesting. Wow.
About which I know absolutely nothing.
Well, you are a straight shooter. I can see that. What lay in front of you when you finished your state boards? Did you think that you would stay in Dallas?
I still had to finish nursing school. At that time, okay. You took your boards before you finished nursing school.
How much longer did you have?
I took boards in the summer, and I had till September. Well, I had about 30 or 4 to 5 days of makeup time because of illness. But I had already passed boards by the time I finished nursing school.
And was it your expectation that you would go into the service? I mean, this is the height of World War II.
No, I knew I was going to go to the University of Texas and get a degree in nursing. In teaching.
In teaching. You wanted to be on the faculty.
I wanted to be a nurse teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And while I was there, they said they were going to... that they were going to... bring the nurses into the Army, and they said, not this child.
Draft them, essentially.
They were going to draft them for a period, basically.
Uh-huh.
And I said, not this child.
Why not?
I didn't want in the damned Army.
What did you think of the war at this point?
World War II?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I was in favor of World War II. First, the reason I didn't want in the Army is they had split shifts. And I had had my fill of those. Work till 12, come back at 3, and work till 7. No way. The Navy had straight 8-hour shifts.
Yes.
So I said, I'm going into the Navy. I'm not getting into that damned Army.
And how did you manage?
I went to Houston and was interviewed, and I've forgotten some kind of recruiting thing there in Houston.
Uh-huh.
I was in Austin. I went to Houston. And was interviewed and signed up.
Do you remember that visit, the recruiting visit that you went on?
I don't remember who I talked to or anything about it. I just know I went and slept in the train. I'd never been to the sleeping car sleeping.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember that.
But your goal was not so much to get into the Navy as to avoid being in the Army?
That's right.
Did you feel like... you were entering into part of a big patriotic movement. How did you view it?
I just felt like I'm not going to be drafted.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just take my own life and do what I want to with it. Don't tell me what to do.
Mm-hmm. You weren't, I'm going to gather, checking the newspaper every day to see how the war was going, or any of that.
I never have read the newspaper.
Really?
Really.
Why?
It's a bunch of stuff, and it's only one person's opinion.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't influence you that much.
No.
I
might look at it if there's a big headline or something. Like, there was one headline. Let's see. Roosevelt's first name, what was it?
President Roosevelt?
Yeah.
Franklin?
FDR OK's TVA. Now, I remember that one.
Because it was all just letters?
All those letters, and it made good sense to me. Because I knew what the Tennessee Valley Authority was.
Right,
and
right.
I knew who FDR was. Mm-hmm. But most of the time, it was just... stuff.
Did you have an impression of President Roosevelt? Did you?
I liked him.
Why?
I just thought he was in a bad situation and was doing the best job he could possibly do, on top of which he was also handicapped.
Did you know that at the time?
Yeah.
Did pretty much everyone know that?
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, historians now have gone back over this and, you know, searching for photographs of him wearing his braces and all this sort of thing. And
you don't have very many of those.
And,
mostly he's standing. Maybe he has a cane.
Usually he has someone at his elbow assisting him.
Right beside him.
But you knew he had had polio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
The idea was that he was, as a public figure, trying to project strength and so on, and he didn't want that
to be a part
dwelt
of it.
On anyway.
Yeah.
Was there a sense that you should feel sorry for him in some way?
Oh, no. Oh, no, you admired him or you disliked him intensely, one or the other.
Uh-huh. But you were more admiring of him.
I was more, I admired him, and he was the reason we only have that a person can only be elected twice, because he had three terms, four. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. right, four terms.
And
but we needed him at that time. There's not anybody else that I can think of that could have done the things that he did.
Yeah, he changed America, that's for sure.
Yeah, he really did.
What about Mrs. Roosevelt? Did you see her as...
I can always remember, we can't bomb there because Eleanor is there.
She was something else.
She was something else.
As we learn. Did you have an impression of her, favorable or unfavorable? Or?
I accepted her as a nice person, a good person, and who was very active in the war effort and everything.
Yes. She changed the position of the First Lady, too, by her activities.
Yeah.
She was quite independent, as you know.
Hit, darling.
She was something else. But I wonder, you know, you're from Texas. You're a Texan, and, you know, proud of it. And, you know, these were a couple of serious Yankees. Did you feel the difference between them and you?
No.
Did you ever listen to him on the radio?
Oh, yeah. Yesterday, a day that will live in infamy, the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor. Oh, yeah. I listened. He was quite a man, that president was. We've had one or two since then that were good.
I'll ask you which ones those are another time. What did you feel like when you heard that we were at war with the Japanese?
You know where I was when I heard it?
I'd love to know where.
I was in nursing school.
Sure.
And we had three stories and a basement to our building. And we had a mailbox, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, and
right.
you just went through my T's to find if I had any mail. It was on the first level, not the basement, but the first level, in the hallway. And I had stopped to check my mail, and someone came down the stairs or came into the little platform
mm-hmm.
area
mm-hmm.
and said, "The Japanese just bombed Pearl Harbor." Just absolutely wiped the feet out from under you, nearly.
I believe it.
Yeah. And total silence after that was said. There's absolute total silence. There was only one or two of us there. I mean, besides me.
Yeah. Yeah, what do you do?
Nothing. You can't do a dang thing. And so, of course, you know, I still had a year or mm-hmm. year and a half, maybe 2 years to go. There's no way I was going to be involved in it at that point.
Right. Did you feel anything as the months went on about the Japanese themselves? You know, there was so much propaganda and a lot of it very racist.
I don't know that I did. I didn't like the Japanese that bombed us.
But you were distinguishing them from
other
the Japanese people.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that you didn't like the military government.
Yeah.
And what they had done. Yeah.
It was just one of the things that hit you like a ton of bricks.
Can't imagine that.
And, of course, when I finished nursing school, I went to the University of Texas. I didn't go into the service.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't, I told you it was later that I went in the service,
mm-hmm.
that I even applied. I don't know.
Maddie was, let me try to draw a comparison and see if you can measure it out. Was that day that you were sorting your mail, trying to find your mail, and you heard this, was that day something similar to what you might have felt when you found out that New York City was being attacked,
the Twin Trade Towers. Oh, it very much the same.
Same kind of thing?
Very much the same. I sat and I watched those towers go down and go down and go down and go down. And I just, you're numb.
Yeah.
You're just numb. You can't even get hatred. And you think, how stupid are those people? Right now, they blow up somebody over somewhere. How stupid can you get? And that's not religion. That is stupidity of the first order. And that's being a total puppet for some idiot.
Right. To the point of taking not only someone else's life, but your own.
Your own and many others.
Yeah, as many as possible.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then, on the news yesterday or day before, some damn husband and wife?
Yeah, this is the
bombing. Hers didn't go off.
Yeah. This is the bombings at the hotels in Jordan.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know what? That's not religion. That's not religion of any kind. I don't care what you are. That's not religion. That's stupidity.
Mind control?
Sure.
Surrendering your will?
Yeah, that's
that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Manny, can I ask you a little bit more about the hospital?
Sure.
You mentioned that the downstairs was the segregated area,
right,
for black people. Now, did you have any black nurses going through your school?
No.
Were the people who were giving treatment to the black patients also black or
white?
So all the employees of the hospital essentially were white?
Unless you cleaned the floors or did the scut work.
Then you could be black or Hispanic?
Mostly Hispanic.
Mostly
very
Hispanic.
Very few. I don't remember very many, hardly any blacks. Mostly Hispanic.
How did you feel at that time about segregation?
Well, when I lived in Fort Worth, we had an alley between our backyard and the backyard behind us.
Mm-hmm.
And on the back of the property, not all of them, but some of them in that block, were little houses where black families lived.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up with a nanny, or a black lady who cleaned our house and was very important to me as a child.
What was her name?
And she lived about two houses down and across the alley.
What did you call her?
I don't remember. Whatever her name was, I don't remember.
Did you call her Mrs. whatever her name was? Or just
Martha or whatever her name was.
Mm-hmm.
So I had black people that lived in the right next to me,
right,
with me, more or less. And they were wonderful people. They really were. I had a cousin who lived in Dalhart, Texas. And the Dalhart, Texas had a sign at the entrance to every road entering their town: "Never don't let the sun set on you in the city limits."
Okay.
This young lady, my cousin, was terrified of black people. When she would come to visit, if we were walking down the street and a black person, it didn't matter how big or how little or what sex, came toward us, she would put me between her and them. She would move around me to get them, make me be the middle man.
And this was out of fear?
Yeah. Oh, yes. This is terrified.
This is driven by
fear. She was terrified of black people.
Because she thought, what would happen?
I don't know.
Hmm.
But when you grow up in a town that says, don't let the sun set on you here.
It's sending a message.
It sends a message.
You're right.
But I enjoyed working with the black people, the black patients. I enjoyed it very much. They were friendly. They were warm. They're human beings. And I don't think I ever had a problem with it at all. Now, I have some problems with black people. I really do. But I have worked real hard to get over a lot of it. But I still have them. I still have some.
It
depends on what happens.
Is some of that just from growing up in the segregated South?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I've never personally had any problem.
Right.
Now, I'm going to tell you this. When I had my surgery,
mm-hmm.
a black doctor came in my room, and I was angry.
Why?
I don't ever remember him introducing himself. And I presume he's Dr. Richard's partner.
Uh-huh.
But he'll never touch me, and he'll never be in the room whenever he looks at me for any reason.
Now, was this you have this feeling, it seems less because he's black, but more because he didn't introduce himself to you or speak
no,
to you as a patient?
No, because he's a black man who thinks he's somebody.
Okay.
That's Southern segregation. And he's the only one I really reacted that way to in years.
Really?
Yeah.
But so you're kind of surprised.
I am sort of surprised, but I'm not going to have anything to do with him.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, is this something that you've thought a lot about over the years, or have you?
No,
not so
this
much?
Just happened.
Yeah.
But I've thought about it since.
Mm-hmm. But your own, you know, kind of the baggage that you are carrying around because of the attitudes that were in place when you grew up, is that something that has intruded on you? Or
I don't know.
Not so much?
I don't know. There are a number of black people that work right here.
Yes.
And I don't have anything against them. And I'm friendly with them,
yes,
you know.
Yes, sure. Sure.
I think I'm just reacting to him.
Mm-hmm. And going back to your days when you were training in the hospital, those patients you saw them as patients.
They were patients, and they were people.
Yeah.
It didn't matter what color their skin was.
Who needed help.
Yeah. There was one of them, I remember, a man. We had what they call a burn cradle. It's a metal cradle that goes over your body, and you put the sheet over that.
To protect it, so that it doesn't lay on your skin?
Uh-huh. And I was in there one day, two men side by side, and one man was saying, "Man, what happened?" I said, "Well, she found out I was playing around on her, and so she just boiled up a pan of water and poured it on me."
Mm-hmm.
And the other man said, "Oh, are you going back there?" And he said, "Yes, sir, I'm scared not to." Now, see, that's humor.
Mm-hmm.
That's wonderful. "Yes, sir, I'm scared not to."
Did they replicate on that lower floor the same kinds of wards and everything that they had upstairs?
Yeah, they had private rooms, 4 bedrooms, and 8 bedrooms.
But would never allow black people to be treated upstairs.
That's right. They had their own unit. Well, one was surgical and one was medical.
Okay.
They had two units.
Okay. Uh-huh.
Now, I'm trying to remember about delivery, labor and delivery. I think if a woman was in labor, she went to the labor and delivery unit. It didn't matter what color her skin was.
Because they didn't have one downstairs.
Yeah. We had one nursery, one premature nursery, one regular nursery, one unit, and then I think 2 or 4 rooms, delivery rooms.
And what about the emergency room? Could the black people come in there?
Yeah.
And then they would be
sent where they needed to be sent.
Okay.
Emergency room was sort of interactive. Mm-hmm. And I think, also labor and delivery.
How did the doctors treat the nurses? The nursing students, I should say.
Well, fine.
No problems?
Well, not that I was damn big.
They didn't pick on you.
They didn't pick on me, and I could stand there like this with my hand up, and there was one doctor that could just run right under my arm. He was so short. They always thought they were God.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But they weren't. They put their pants on just like I did.
And did they pick up from you, do you think, that you weren't going to play that game?
I was bigger than they were.
That's a distinct advantage. See, all that stand up straight thing actually paid off.
Yeah, it did. I was there to learn.
Yes.
And I learned a lot. And someone asked one time in one of our classes, who is the most important person in the hospital? And every damn student there said the doctor. And they said, no, it's the patient. Learned a lesson. The most important person in the hospital is the patient.
It sounds like even though Ms. Smith was tough, she ran a pretty good shop.
She did. She ran a great shop.
Yeah. And set you up pretty well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And when you did leave there, did you go then to the university to study?
I worked there for about 4 or 5 months until I could get into the university.
Right. And so you started in that fall?
No, I worked that fall and went in this next spring.
Okay.
44.
Okay. And you were there for, what, a year and a half or 2 years?
About a year.
And did you earn a degree?
Oh, no. Not UT.
Later you did that.
Let's see. I went to the University of Southern California and got a couple of degrees there, but they were in radio and television.
Mm-hmm.
And then went to embalming school. And then went to Orange and was teaching, and so I started working on my master's in education up here at Tech. And then after I'd been teaching for 5 years, mind you, they said I had to have a BSN, Bachelor of Science in Nursing.
Now, this is at Methodist, they said this?
No, the State Board of Nurse Examiners.
Oh, they changed the rules.
Said you can't teach if you don't have a degree in nursing. So I challenged at West Texas State and got my degree.
So just to recap here, how many degrees do you have, Maddie?
Radio and television.
That's
and
BA.
BSN.
BSN.
And education. I have a couple of degrees from the University of Southern California, both of them in radio and television.
Including, is one of those a master's degree?
I did all the master's work, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do the... I told the man to go shove it up where the sun doesn't shine. He was telling me that what I was doing was not right, and I said, I'm working in the industry, and you're telling me, sitting up here in your ivy tower, that I'm wrong. You can have it and shove it where the sun doesn't shine.
What was the issue there?
I don't remember. He was just such an egotistical son of a gun. I told him to shove it.
You meet those people along the way.
Yeah.
Well, he wasn't gonna win you out.
Anyhow, when I left there, that was it. I worked in television for 5 years.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that in some detail, if you're willing.
Yeah.
Maybe our next time. Let's take a break there.